Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, a note on potential risks in capital budgeting decision-making, and then I will spend a few minutes talking about a subject that I'll pick up back on Monday, having to do with actual execution of trades and some more about investments. And then we'll have a quiz, and then that'll be it for the day. The quiz has a password on it, and I'll give you the password at the appropriate time. And then next week, Monday, aside from some more lecture and examples of trading, I will go through the Federal Reserve. Now, your resources tab will have resources for this subject. This is not the textbook, this is a special lecture. And then on Wednesday and Friday will be the last part of the new content that will be ethics. And then from there we get into the final leg of the course, reviewing and all that for the final exam. But to begin with for today, now there's no market. Markets aren't open today, interestingly enough. So apparently this is Good Friday and somehow they decided that maybe it's not a good idea to have people trading their 30 pieces of silver on this day. I don't know. But it is, I didn't see it coming, and all of a sudden, there it is. No trading today. So we'll pick back up on Monday and let the markets build up whatever sentiment they have over the weekend. Hard to say where it's going to go right now. But anyway, and then I'm going to show you some things about trading, some terminology, which I anticipate that you'll be responsible for on the final exam. It mostly just how you do things when you are executing trades. But first of all, a few last notes about capital budgeting and risks that can befall the company that is planning for new projects. One of the places that, and the book mentions this too, is make sure that your projects are prepared for the possibilities of lawsuits. Products are going to have that issue, and you need to have that in place as one of the potential problems and have the mitigation strategies to deal with them. I brought up the case of companies that built private airplanes many years ago. And there are those problems that happen all the time with products, problems. And sometimes these do have dramatic impacts on free cash flow that you might not have seen coming. However, the long-winded stories about the suffering corporations that have been sued for hundreds of millions of dollars, they cry crocodile tears about that. Don't believe those. In many states, the awards, notwithstanding what the jury awards, the actual award to the plaintiff who wins is much, much smaller, simply because they don't get to have all of the money that the jury awarded. This was tort reform many years ago. Companies don't mention that when they cry about how mean the consumers are who sue them, that they actually never pay out hardly, literally a dime on the dollar for these jury awards. Another one that is an important consideration that it's always there, and sometimes it's worse than other times, is regulatory changes. Regulations are in place for reasons. They're not there willy-nilly. Some group has said this is a problem. Some constituency, some stakeholder group has found that there's a problem, and a regulatory change can happen that can disrupt your free cash flows in a project. That's just the reality of it. It happens. There are ways to mitigate this, and there are ways to utilize it as well. And I want to mention a few of those issues, too. But before I do that, also there's one other one that has been a problem for some years now. it started up in the 1990s. Remember I told you that the shareholders are the company. They can't sue the company. Now, the bondholders, they can shut the company down if they're not paid their coupons and their face value of their debt. But the shareholders, they can't sue. Well, that's actually not true. There is a way for the shareholders to sue, what's called a shareholder derivative action. Essentially, the shareholders are suing the company as a separate entity from themselves, saying the management screwed up or the board of directors screwed up. Now, there were these little boutique law firms in California who got the ball rolling. They would buy stock in the company, and then they would immediately sue it, or very shortly thereafter sue it, saying the stock price didn't go up enough, but the stock price went down. And companies, to a large extent, they just wrote these law firms checks, saying, okay, you represent this class of shareholders. Okay, here's a check. Shut up. And they've gotten a little more aggressive in recent years about this kind of green mail that's going on, but it's still out there. Now, that's why a lot of companies do try to incorporate in states that are business friendly, simply because, for example, Delaware. Delaware has an old court system that is for businesses. And it has its own set of magistrates who are steeped in business law, business practices, and all of that. And they are much more respectful of businesses. There's something I don't know if you were taught in your legal course. You can tell me, were you taught about the business judgment rule? Did they mention it? Okay, there is an old rule going back centuries that says, look, a business has to make a judgment. Management has to make decisions, and those can go wrong. They're not going to always be right. And so this is usually the defense that a company will have. It was a business judgment. Business judgment rules should be allowed to take its to play out here. We screwed up? Okay, fine. You are happy when we do great, so stop bitching when we make a mistake. But one way or the other, you do have to appreciate that sometimes you can even have shareholders suing the company, for heaven's sake, for something that screwed up, a project that went south. So always keep that in mind when you're thinking about your free cash flows. What are the chances that something bad is going to happen as far as shareholders go? Now, going back to regulations, just for a couple of minutes here. Regulations change. They change with data. They change with the influence of stakeholder groups. Environmentalists, safety, and health and safety people get involved in these. So, yeah, you have to consider that that could happen in a corporation. So the bottom line there is, what does this mean to us? Regulations happen. You can affect the regulatory environment. That's why we buy politicians. We give them campaign contributions so we have access to them, so that we can have things go our way. Now, is this evil? Well, kind of. But there was a court ruling some years back in which the Supreme Court said that businesses could make unlimited contributions to corporations. And for many reasons, that's a really bad idea, thinking that corporations have the rights of citizens to contribute to political campaigns and all of that. But they do. For the time being, that's one of our vehicles for controlling the regulatory environment, so it doesn't go south on us and have regulations hit us that we aren't expecting. On the other hand, there are times when we want regulations for two reasons. One is, regulations level the playing field. They make the bad players behave the way the good players do, and that is good. It gives us all a framework in which we can build products, we can create products, we can have ideas, and get them under a set of rules into the marketplace. But there's another possibility, too. Sometimes I want regulations that are pretty severe. I, as a corporation, would want them. Can you think of any time when I would be a company that would want some regulation? I would want strong regulation. I would want the government, the federal and state government, to crack down on corporations, and here I am, one of those that's going to be in the crackdown. Is there some reason why I would want that? Got it? Well, here it is. I mean, suppose that I'm ready for the regulations, and I know my competitors aren't.
I would be very happy to make their lives miserable while I loll my way. Oh, we've already got that underway. We've done ISO, we're ISO on it and everything. And our competitors are sitting there on their fat asses. And here we go. They're going to be behind the curve, and I'm ready for this new regulatory environment. That is a time, that's when we pre-plan. You look ahead to regulations. What can we do now that will be a problem as far as regulatory control goes in 5 years? You get ready for it, and then you beat the drum. We need this regulation, boom, boom, boom. And all your competitors are looking at you saying, are you on crack? No, we're ready. You aren't cupcakes. So that's competitive advantage right there. Regulations can be used as a weapon against your competitors. Believe me on that. That sounds a little harsh, but you know, there it is. So always keep these in mind when you're doing capital budgeting exercises and planning. Think about what could come about as far as shareholder derivative actions, outside groups suing you, for what stakeholders suing you, government regulation and all of that. These are all part of the framework of business in a developed society. And to some extent, we always bitch about these kinds of problems, but at the same time, anything that doesn't kill you is probably going to make you stronger as a business and make your planning for new projects that much better because you have done the what-ifs and all of the expected values of the probabilities of the different outcomes. Okay, enough of that for a while. I want to show you just for a few minutes here, and then I'm going to pick this back up next week. I had started to mention some things about stock markets and trading. And in a case like this, this is actually kind of a good day because I don't have to worry about the numbers bouncing around on me here for a little bit. But the first thing I want to do is talk to you about buying and selling stocks and how you actually do it in the real world. It's not, well, I want to buy this stock. Let's go ahead. Go buy it. No, it's not quite that simple. The first thing, obviously, well, not obviously, but I brought it up before, is the simple fact that there is a bid and an ask. And I'm going to look at U.S. Steel here just as a nice little example. Remember that the bid is what you're going to sell a stock at, and the ask is what you're going to buy that stock at. Now, you're not going to want to use Yahoo because they're behind the curve as far as quotations go. They're 15-minute or delay or something like that. However, here's the thing is that if you say, I want you to buy one round lot X, then they're going to buy it at whatever the price is at the instant that trade hits a market maker who fills it. Now, many stocks have different market makers. In other words, those who would buy and sell it. So as soon as you say buy it, they're going to buy it. Well, here we've got U.S. Steel right now at $37.23. So is that the price you're going to get? Maybe not. You see, because if you don't specify a limit order, they're going to buy it at the market. In other words, whatever that price is when it hits. So suppose that United States Steel, trading symbol X, pops to $37.50 a share sometime between when you say buy it and when it's executed. You're buying it at the market. You didn't tell them anything else. That's why whenever you put in an order, you probably will be smarter to put in a limit. I want you to buy U.S. Steel X one round lot at $37.23 or better. In other words, do not buy it unless it is at $37.23 or lower than that. You could even say $37.20 or better. You don't know if it's going to execute or not at that, but it might. Now, the next part is the time limit. You can give it a good till canceled. In other words, just keep this order open until I kill it or it expires on its own. Or you could say good for the day. A lot of times these trading houses use good for the day unless you say something different from them. In other words, that order will stay open for that day, and then it expires, it's gone. So if you don't want it to expire right away, you would probably specify something like GTC, good till canceled, or good for 48 hours, or whatever. But you want to maybe put a time frame on it. You don't have to because it would, otherwise it'll just sit there for the day and then it'll expire if it doesn't execute. Now, I said 37.20 on U.S. Steel. Well, it's 37.23. It won't execute. Yahtzee, I'm just going to wait. It's hanging there. If there's a blip down, I might be able to get it at a bargain. I might be able to get it at a better price. You got to be a little careful of that. If that thing starts collapsing, it's going to execute at 37.20 on its way down to hell. But know that a limit on what you want to spend is always, always a good idea. Buying at the market, unless you are ready for a surprise, if it pops on you before the trade executes, you could be really sad about what you paid for that. Because remember, it's moving around all the time. Typically, I shave a little bit off when I do my limit. If I were to buy, and as a matter of fact, just a while back, I bought U.S. Steel, and I put a limit on it at that time. I'm trying to remember what I did. I think it was like, the quote was like, the ask was 37.05, and I said at 37 or better, and I didn't specify time, so it was good till the end of the day. It actually executed really quickly, too. Now, you got to remember that most stocks have more than one market maker. They see each other's bids and asks, obviously. But there could be one, he's just gotten a pile someone sold, and he might be willing to give me a quick little deal. In that case, it actually worked for me. I got it at 37, I think it was 37 on the button, even though the quote was a little more than that. This can happen, know it. You don't have to let the market's going to do whatever it does. You control what's going to happen. Now, you got to be a little careful about some things like jumps in prices. You can, like, for example, here's a sell order. I want you to sell U.S. Steel at 37, I'd say 37.12, okay? One round lot, I've got a round lot, I want to dump it, and I'm going to put in an order, good tilt for the day, 37.12. So if the stock price drops down to 37.12, instantly it'll trigger, and I will get rid of it. I will dump it. Now, the problem, though, is that it might drip down there, execute, and then pop back up. You know, that's just what you do. That's why you might want to put a little bit of a limit on what's going on with the stock. There is something called a trailing order, a trailing stop that can help, and I'll show you that on Monday, how you can do a trailing stop. One of the things that I do oftentimes is when a stock price is going up, it's going up, 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 I will actually put in a sell order that's I call it like a trailing stop. It says, okay, it's going upward, but if it turns down more than 5% from its top, get the heck rid of it right there. That way you don't, oh boy, I'm making a lot of money. Oh, boo hiss, I lost a lot of money. You actually stop it before you get something, get a bad deal out of it. Okay, so that's a stop, so that you can actually say, if it goes down by more than a certain amount when it was going up, get it off my books, for heaven's sake. You'll lose a little, but you won't lose a lot. The same is true on a buy order. Okay, I can watch a stock going down, and I'll say, okay, if that stock goes down and then it turns up by a certain percentage over its bottom, buy it. So in other words, I can grab it when it's bounce on the bounce back from the low. These are stop limits, and they are nice to use. And I'll talk more about them. I'll show you an example on Monday. They are the way that a real investor, even an amateur or someone who doesn't do it very often, should make orders instead of just letting the market beat the hell out of them the way markets tend to like to do sometimes. And there are other small features that I'll show you on Monday, and I'll also show you how to do a short sale, how to short a stock so that you are actually betting that the stock will go down. It has some risk to it, and there are some situations where it's a disaster, but at the same time, it's something that you can do. You don't have to buy stocks to make money. You can actually short sell stocks and make money too. So there you are. A couple of the little features that are worth you knowing if you are ever going to invest. Now, this is my world, and I tell it to you in just basic terms, do this, do this, do this. Don't do all this weird-ass fancy stuff that these day traders always moan and groan about. Just know some basics of how to do these kinds of trades, and you'll make more money than you would, or lose less money than you would, if you know these little side gigs that are part of the trading casino. Anyway, that's all I have for you for the day. I thank you.